ISIS-K is the branch or affiliate of the Islamic State in Afghanistan. It is one of the earliest branches that the Islamic State established after it established the caliphate. And it's one of the few, ISIS in Libya is only the other example, of the affiliates that ISIS-K Central established from Syria. They sent people to Afghanistan to establish the branch rather than building on already existing other terror groups. It is a very dangerous organization, Takfiri in ideology, like the Islamic State, which means even Muslims are legitimate targets and must be killed. And it is somewhat in opposition to the Taliban, although the Taliban only are in opposition to ISIS-K if it suits their purpose, not in a strategic manner.
How will this impact the Taliban?
The Taliban's position towards ISIS has been quite dubious. When it fit their purpose, for example, when ISIS-K established its physical presence in Nangarhar, the group is completely against drug production, it collected all the poppies and paid for them from the farmers in the areas where they're in control and burned them, destroyed all drug laboratories and explained that anyone involved in the drug trade will be killed if this continues. This triggered a vicious Taliban resistance in Nangarhar. Then ISIS-K tried to establish itself in the north at the same time when the Taliban, a couple of years ago, tried to establish themselves in the north. The Taliban fought them. Since that time, however, the Taliban have not really sustainably fought ISIS-K. It's established in the east of Afghanistan, Nangarhar, Gunar, Nuristan, and the Taliban left them alone there.
We talked a couple of weeks ago about the Taliban and its statement that it would not allow terror organizations to operate in the country, and you made a very astute observation. What does that mean? Does that mean they will can do certain things and get away with it, look the other way, the Taliban? But I think this is a whole different kind of thing. What took place today seems to be in direct opposition to what the Taliban wanted in terms of getting the U.S. out and following through. How will this impact the West and the U.S.'s relationship with the Taliban?
Well, I mean, first of all, it was a big embarrassment to the Taliban. And as you said, it certainly wasn't in the interest to disrupt the last couple of hours, really, of the evacuation organization. They want everyone out, in particular the Americans out, as soon as possible, so that they can establish their, whatever they're going to call it, government or regime, and then show their true face in Afghanistan. For that, the Americans need to leave. So the earlier they leave, the better. That's why they're not willing to extend the deadline. This is, of course, an internal challenge at the moment for the Taliban, who were, as you remember, not in the business of preventing terrorism for the last 20 years, but perpetrating terrorism. So their counterterrorism capabilities are virtually non-existing.
Talk about, if you will, the bigger picture here of a country of 35 million people with no recognized leadership outside of the country. Certainly, they don't have any kind of security capability and a whole lot of ungoverned space. What's the impact there and for the rest of the world?
Yeah, I mean, there are buckets of challenges. Yeah? Today, I think, is a preview of what we can expect. The Taliban have no real interest to prevent terrorism, even at the risk of it embarrassing them, as it did in 9/11. The Taliban were not in favor of 9/11. They were just not in favor of giving Osama bin Laden to the Americans. That's one. So we have this terrorism challenge that we really have to make sure that we don't see this re-establishing terror structure. Difficult to do, but necessary. Then, of course, there is the economic and humanitarian challenge. Certainly, this country is at a complete standstill. It wasn't really a thriving economy to start with. So there is a brewing and growing urgent humanitarian crisis. And for that one, the international community will have to help. And humanitarian deliveries, food and medicine cannot be part of the equation of what we do or don't do with whoever is in power in Kabul at the moment. It would just be inhumane and against international law. And then there is the bucket of international recognition, international aid, and economic development support if the Taliban are in power. This is what the Taliban want. That's why they make all of these rather wishy-washy but conciliatory sounding statements. That's why they continue to behave as long as all the cameras of the Western media are trained on Kabul, because they want that money. And that is at least some leverage for the international community, in particular the Europeans and the US. This can only happen if there are very strict conditions on what the Taliban do with terrorism, how they treat their own population, in particular women, who are now told to stay home for their own safety from the Taliban, which is the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard. They had 20 years to train their fighters to treat women decently, and apparently they haven't managed to do that. So what's the hope that they do that in the next 20 years? So these are the conditionality that we have to impose if the Taliban should ever have a hope of international recognition. The problem and challenge here, of course, are countries like Russia, China, Pakistan, and possibly even Iran, who seem to toy with the idea. I mean, Pakistan is more than toying, but the rest is toying with the idea of possibly recognizing a government in Kabul if there are fig leaves like the former President Karzai or Abdullah Abdullah in the government. That is a dangerous situation. No recognition without conditionality would be the only thing that is left for us to do at this point.
Dr. Hans-Jacob Schindler is Senior Director of the Counter-Extremism Project. He's also the former coordinator of the Al-Qaeda-Taliban Monitoring Team at the United Nations. J.J. Green, WTOP News.